All right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week, we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool? Is it shit?
Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit?
Welcome to the editor's meeting.
Okay, so welcome to the Cool Shit Podcast, episode 51. My name is Gareth Carter. We have our selected guest this week, who I am calling Big J.
Thank you.
Big J and Little J.
Little J. Pipe down, because Big J's in there.
Yeah, pipe down, Little J.
sorry, Big J.
So I'm referring to Jaron. How you going, mate?
Yeah, good. Feeling big.
Yeah. and of course, she's always here. Gina, how are you?
I'm fine.
How's your weekend in Lisbon?
You're about to say, how's your throat?
Yeah, she's come back with a manky, sore throat. As she always does when she goes on a girl's holiday.
All the AC on the plane and drinking, things like that. So I do sound a bit husky, but I always sound husky on this podcast, so I'll just go with it.
Oh, do you think that's your vibe, is it?
I think I'm like...
You're bringing the husky
thing,
are you?
I'm so like husky and mysterious. No one knows anything about me.
Yeah,
me too.
James, yeah. the chief editor of the Cool Shit newsletter and the podcast. How are you? What's going on?
Yeah, I'm fine. When you say what's going on, do you mean with me or with
Cool Shit? I was actually clarifying. I was asking about you, you know. Okay.
Oh, with me?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, no, not much. Yeah, fine. I was in a bad mood yesterday, but I'm feeling more cheerful
same
today.
Same thing every week.
Yeah, you're always in a bad mood. I mean, are you 50% in a bad mood?
Only 50? Are you 50% drunk? I would kill for 50.
Yeah. What about the stories? There's been a bit of moaning. We had a bit of a production meeting beforehand, didn't we? The stories aren't fantastic.
I don't want to overstate this, but I think in my 3 years of doing Cool Shit, it might be the worst selection I've ever seen.
Stick around!
No, but the reason, I think that is selling it though, because now, in the same way when like a film is so bad that you feel like you have to watch it, like a Sharknado, if I just said, oh yeah, no, they're not that good,
like
then it wouldn't, like Sharknado.
Sharknado.
So if this could be the worst ever Cool Shit podcast, then we could get a kind of cult following for it.
Well, listen, the podcast is going to be fine. The stories you're saying are shit, but I've seen them. They're not too bad. We're going to scoot through a couple, aren't we?
We're going to scoot. Like a dog with worms. Yeah.
There you go. All right, James, go on. Let's hear. What have you got first? What are you bringing?
It's not really cool. Well, it might be. It's probably cool for some people. Some people are probably celebrating it. But it's quite big news, kind of, I guess, tangentially attached to our industry, but just in the world in general. I assume we're all familiar with Vice, the massive media conglomerate that's kind of been growing and growing over the last, 20 years, I guess?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, some of these stories.
They're not. Yeah, that's where it's one of our kind of usual haunts for Cool Shit fodder. But they've fallen on hard times, and it looks like they're about to declare bankruptcy.
That's sad.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Though. I kind of think fuck Vice, though. So.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, I think Vice is... it's one of those things that people have an opinion on, either way. It's kind of like, oh, fuck Vice.
It's divisive, you could say. Yeah.
It creates opposing views, doesn't it? Is it just like, you know, super cool, hipster bullshit? Is it like mega woke? Is it actually right wing? Do you know what I mean? Murdoch funded. Proud Boys Association.
Well, no, it was founded by a Proud Boy, which is why I think they go kind of so far the opposite of that now, because they want to kind of remove themselves, get very far away from that slightly checkered past. So that guy though, he's actually well interested. You know, he started the Proud Boys as a joke. Like, he was on the Anthony Kumia radio show and he was like kind of memeing himself and saying like, yeah, we're going to get a load of guys who love America, we'll be the Proud Boys, and then like people just started following it. It was like one of those things, like the birds aren't real thing, that kind of just got out of control, then became a real thing, which is quite funny.
Yeah, I mean, I find this story like hugely interesting actually, because Vice, it's been very interesting for a very long time. So like I just had a little scoot through its history. Founded in 1994 in Montreal, a sort of like a cool neighborhood. Obviously it then became a magazine first. I first remember picking up the magazine after it came to the UK, because it went to America first, I reckon sometime in the noughties, and I remember thinking, what the fuck is this? The article was like, we went to London in our pants, and it was an article about just a group of mates that just hung around in their pants all day, and it had like...
When I do that, no one writes a story about it.
I think that was the reaction it was supposed to have, like, what the fuck's all this about? Then famously Nathan Barley. I don't know if you've ever seen that show. It's a Charlie Brooker comedy that's based on Vice. And then it just started to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. And if you've ever worked in what we do and you work with brands, you know that they had partnership deals where brands would approach Vice and Vice would say, look, we have to make it for you. So there was a partnership model. So they were doing very well, it seemed, on that. But I think this is just an ancient tale of like Rome, isn't it? It just grew too big. They had Viceland. It had loads of different, like, they were buying beer brands at points. And I think it sort of like strayed too far from some kids and some pants going into London and just sort of like being more irreverent for the sake of it and actually having to feed the beast of growth, of profit, of all of those things, and basically just a big corporate company.
Well, you'd say Rome, I'd say Greece. It's Icarus. They flew too close to the sun.
Yeah, there you
go. Burned their wings. I think we read a similar thing about how particularly Vice UK and Vice US were different things. And Vice UK still wanted to be kind of what they were, the old school, but different sort of independent feeling journalism, kind of quick reactive stuff, stuff that other journalists wouldn't write about. Where it was kind of the largely US driven approach, which was let's just keep expanding into all of these other quite sort of disparate areas. And then it just became this kind of uncontrollable beast, which was great when like there's a load of people who are following it, who are consuming the content. But then as soon as that dies down a little bit, because these things do go in like in waves, like look at fucking Vine or whatever, then all of a sudden you've got all of these people on the staff and you've got this massive sort of corporate conglomerate, which was kind of what they were set up to be against. And all of a sudden, nobody's really picking up the content anymore.
The readership got old with the readers. Yeah. So it's very millennial, right? Mm. And it didn't capture what Gen Z is about, which kind of feels a little bit more hopeful than what millennials had, more of an interest in being a little bit more nasty, where on the face of it, I think Gen Z are a little bit more aware of those things. And Vice kind of played into that. I will say, though, like Vice has had some amazing journalism.
Yeah, I used to love them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, the one thing that really sticks out for me is I remember watching it and just like thinking, how the fuck have you done this? They had ISIS head of social media, and they were
head off. Did you say
head of social media?
Oh, I thought you said that on purpose.
I thought you were doing head off. Yeah, like, head off. Head off social media. Yeah.
No, the head of social media. They got inside whichever country they're in. I believe it was Iraq at the time, and it was like on the ground reporting. Obviously, they had to work with a local to be able to do that. It was right inside the Taliban. I was like, the BBC couldn't have done that. Sky couldn't have done that. I thought it was like fucking amazing. And so for every moment like that, I think it kept on expanding because people believed in it, and it just kept on like getting pushing too far from where it should have been, right? Mm.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of why I said fuck Vice, because I used to fucking love Vice, particularly. I used to want to work for Vice, actually. When I was first thinking about what I might want to do for a job, when I was at university, rather than studying, I'd watch their documentaries. I guess where they were so well funded and so popular, it seems like a good environment for a creative, because there were so many of those documentaries where you could tell it someone like, let's just make a film on this, and it was like, yeah, fuck yeah, let's do it. So like even the kind of the random niche ones, like there was one like Britain's Scariest Debt Collector, which I've seen like three times, or the ones on like bare knuckle boxing, they're such good little deep dives into these weird little micro communities. Yeah, yeah, subcultures, micro communities. And in a sense, that felt like quite, I mean, looking at the world today, that actually feels quite sort of ahead of its time in a way. But they moved quite far away from that. And then it became, maybe it is that sort of millennial nastiness, where particularly then when Trump came about, then it was just kind of, I don't know, a lot of it's kind of like point scoring nastiness and very, yeah, negative. It's not hopeful. It's the world's going to shit and here's why and here are all the reasons. Like, it became quite a negative thing to scroll through.
I agree with James. Like, I used to love it, like, far more than I do or did now. But, like, I don't have such a disdain with it today like you do. I think it's cool. I still think it offered something that most outlets don't even come close to, even though it's not doing what it, you know, authentically did once upon a time. Whether that's the correlation of Murdoch and whatnot, who knows, when money started to come into it. They've been struggling for money for ages, Vice. We say it's grow.
But it was until about like 2000, like just pre-pandemic or something.
Yeah, and that's it.
I think it was, I looked at the numbers, it was valued at like $6 billion, and now it's like one and a half.
The board recently were about to do a deal with Disney and they turned it down, yeah, like Disney Plus. That would have been awful.
That would have been so strange.
But exactly, it's got to, like, I don't know, I know you're watching Succession. It's got to sort of Succession levels of like companies trying to buy it where it shouldn't be. It's just like, you don't pair with this company whatsoever.
But those companies shouldn't even want to buy it. Like, I'll tell you what they seem like now. They seem like a company who are copying Vice badly. It's like a rip-off. It's like a much kind of safer, more corporately acceptable version, I guess, yeah.
It's an interesting question, though, like where media goes, because is TV in its current form broadcast? That's going to go pretty soon in our lifetimes, right? Vice, which felt kind of new and exciting, that hasn't particularly worked. What's actually going to happen? It's like, eventually, we're all just watching our one favourite dickhead, like on YouTube, where we get all of our world views from, like sponsored by Powerade or whatever.
It's yeah, or like, maybe people will just get all the current affairs from the Cool Shit podcast.
Maybe they will.
They'll have to listen to this.
Although I do wonder, it's interesting, because you say like a TV won't exist. I do wonder sometimes with stuff like that, whether we get slightly swept up in a kind of London-centric bubble and you speak to people and it's like, oh, I don't watch any TV, but I think there's still quite a lot of people like in kind of other parts of the country who still watch
8
the...
8 p.m, that's the time that ends.
Genuinely, like if you lived in New York, then you'd think like the most popular show in America is White Lotus or Succession, but it's actually NCIS, which nobody watches because it's like the kind of middle America, equally middle Britain, who are watching like This Morning or whatever.
It's these echo chambers that led me to believe Labour were going to win.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you might not know this, but James is a Nepo baby.
I'm not a Nepo baby. You're right.
Wild form.
Matt Bennett is my mum. Well done.
But we were talking, because I'm not going to go into his history and links with children's television, however.
Thank God you said television.
But we were talking about how there's no Saturday morning show anymore, like your parents used to produce. And while, you know, you made a really good point about, like, you know, these things are still mass, when you look at future generations, like, the reason you don't have those Saturday morning shows anymore is because kids don't watch them because YouTube. But those kids are very soon going to be in their 20s, who are going to be in their 30s, who are going to be in their 40s, and they're taking those sort of, like, these new ways of thinking and, you know, consuming them, right?
I don't disagree. I think, like, Soccer AM is a good example of that because they're kind of audiences were predominantly males to like 30, 35 who are now kind of in that generation where they're not really watching TV as much anymore. The examples of shows that people still watch would be like, I don't know, the kind of daytime TV This Morning, which is kind of predominantly older people. So once they're gone, once they've vanquished, you do question if there'd be kind of the appetite to replace them, I guess, or to replace those sorts of shows. So I don't disagree with you. I just think it's probably slightly further down the line.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Okay. Cool. All right, James. Well, if you do want that job at Vice Media,
get it.
I might have a good time now.
I am the new CEO. what else did you have this week?
We're gonna do a bit of a news round, I suppose, because none of them are interesting enough to delve into too deeply. Although, obviously, this is pretty interesting. I assume you're all aware that we have a new king now, yeah? He was coronated the other day.
Boring.
I'll tell you what I do like about it, though. You know, the anointing part, which is so weird that they do it in private, which is where they have olive oil that was blessed in Jerusalem and the Archbishop of Canterbury like dabs it on his like breast, neck and head or something.
I find the whole thing so weird. It's like a big social construct. Mm. There's a man dressed like a fairy, yeah, like holding swords, and it's just a made up thing. Yet some people attach themselves to it and believe so much that these are our traditions that they almost believe that it's some sort of like godly thing that
the king
but it's just like
supposed to be godly, right?
Olive oil was blessed. That was one of my, I'm not saying it's blessed, I'm saying it was literally blessed. That was one of my main kind of takeaways. You forget how religious it all is, and they're kind of God's representative on earth, which does them no favours. So I think it already, as an institution, is already coming under more scrutiny than it had done previously, and people are thinking this looks a bit mental. And then once you throw in kind of the church as well, which is itself kind of what a lot of young people are turning their backs on, between the two of them you suddenly think, oh, this really isn't for me. Actually,
well, James, I thought, you know, we weren't talking about the coronation.
We're not talking about it. Have you got a story related to it? I have because naturally there have been quite a lot of brands trying to like leverage it, which is probably kind of for those reasons, which is probably more difficult now than it ever was, because you're inevitably going to alienate quite large parts of your audience who don't give a fuck about the coronation. But there's one product that's pretty popular for everyone, and that is vape pens in the shape and style of King Charles's sausage fingers.
Style, you think? So fat, chunky boys.
Because he famously has rather strange, quite beefy looking fingers.
They're so fat. They're like big, chunky sausage fingers.
That's not body shaming.
I feel like you're on the brainstorm team for the vapes.
They are like big sausage fingers.
We're looking at them.
Sucking on one of those. That's absolutely disgusting.
I quite like them. Do you want to know some of the flavours they come in as well?
Go on, what they got?
This is funny. This is what the rest of the world thinks of us. They're made by an American company, and the flavours are English breakfast tea, strawberry jam, tea and scone, it's kind of the same, sausage roll, scotch egg, which would be a nice one.
Egg and meat vape from a big fat
Imagine that, you're in a club and some girl says, oh, can I have a bit of your vape? Scotch egg.
Are you all right with that? It's scotch egg.
You wait right there, I'll go get the HP sauce.
They got coronation chicken, prawn cocktail, English trifle, and champagne. I feel like champagne would be quite nice. But again, knowing I'm sucking his finger, kind of, wouldn't be nice.
I wish they'd just make it finger flavoured, I think.
Sausage finger flavoured.
They even have his signet ring on one of the fingers.
And then what are the other things you
The other thing is, this is just quite funny. Mark Zuckerberg won his first jiu-jitsu tournament, so we're all very happy for him.
Darren hates Mark Zuckerberg.
He's just got something to prove now, isn't he?
Like, well, a lot of these guys, like these, you know, these tech bro billionaire CEO types are into this sort of thing, aren't they? It clears their mind.
They're
you
always
know.
Quite weedy, so maybe it's like self-defense as well. Maybe. They tend to be weedy.
Or maybe it's them trying to sort of like you know, assert their male dominance.
I don't know, jiu-jitsu tends to appeal to quite nerdy blokes though, because it's very kind
it's
of
a bit like chess, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's very technical, and it was specifically designed for like a smaller person to be able to beat up a bigger person.
So like little Jay beating up big Jay.
I should say,
never gonna happen.
Funny you say that, Gino, because I did 6 months of jiu-jitsu. So Darren, let's take it to the mat.
We're back. Jared won.
He begged for mercy. He said, I'm not actually that little after all. What was funny though, what did make me laugh is he won the gold medal, but in one of his matches he lost, but then he remonstrated with the referee and they declared it a draw. So
he bought his
they claimed that like they thought he tapped and he said I didn't, and they said, oh no, of course you didn't, Mark, no worries. Yeah. But the only reason it's quite interesting actually, because you remember were you on it when Jaron was on, and we were talking about the kind of the UFC and the metaverse thing?
I think it was Matt.
Well, because he's been partnering with the UFC and stuff, so I think this is another way of him showing that he's kind of backing up his investments as well.
Yeah, right, okay. And also, it's just a bit ironic seeing he wants us to all spend time in a metaverse, and there he is in real life.
Oh, what? Right. So he's not allowed to do anything in real life?
No, I think he should just sit in a chair and become jelly with a headset on and go, I'm Mark Zuckerberg. No, I'm king of the world. Get me another sausage finger.
You sound like the receptionist.
Mike Wazowski.
From Monsters, Inc.
Go on then, what's the other story?
Last one.
The Scoot section. It's not like Scooting much.
There's a load of writers who are striking at the moment.
Oh, there's a writer's strike.
The Writers Guild of America.
The new Game of Thrones.
Why are they striking?
Interestingly, to the podcast, it's AI, isn't
Probably
it?
Because they were negotiating with a load of studios, including like Amazon, Warner Brothers and stuff, I think, and they didn't have like any of their demands met sufficiently, so they started striking. They think that they're being treated more as like gig workers, and one of their main concerns is that writers want some assurances at the moment because they're facing what is basically an existential threat. Because with like ChatGPT and AI and stuff, the fear now is that studios are going to basically just start getting these kind of generative AI programs to write scripts.
You know, this reminds me of when like the black cab drivers in London, right, like all try to like go, it's not fair, you got banned Uber. It's like, I understand that new things come in and they are threats to like industry, but I also think industry can't just go like, I don't want it in there. Like, I think you have to accept it, because otherwise someone will just come along and start to use it. A young kid who doesn't know anything about anything, who's about 15 years old, prompts the best fucking script in the world and it gets made for next to nothing, and then they're all just gonna look like idiots.
I don't know. I think this is the problem. I think they're intentionally just kind of making a lot of noise, though, because all of the kind of lots of the big talk show hosts have kind of got behind this and stuff. Like I saw Jay Leno on the picket line handing out donuts.
Oh, he doesn't even write his own jokes. He's got a team of writers. What the fuck does he care if it's AI or not?
They're basically saying that kind of this whole industry is propped up by writers who don't get the appreciation they deserve anyway. So the idea of now studios basically just to try to circumvent them to improve their profit margins isn't that agreeable. And that's what I think what they're doing
up
now.
Up your game, writers. Take on the AI.
But no, because I don't think it is up your game, because they'll happily produce a worse product for less money. So I don't think it's like even necessarily that the AI could do something way better and the writers need to up their game. They don't need to be as good as the AI. They need to be way, 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 way better to warrant a paycheck.
As me and Gina are always discussing Succession, I don't think an AI could write something as amazing as Succession.
Absolutely not.
But there's too much human understanding in that show to be able to just learn that from the internet.
Yeah, I feel like we've said that about loads of stuff though, and then eventually they just kind of found a way to do it, right?
But James, are you concerned? You're a writer. Are you worried that Zach are gonna use AI?
Well, no, fortunately nobody pays me for most of my writing, so I feel like I'm quite safe in that sense. My poems, but yeah, I mean, it's perfectly plausible that copywriters could be replaced as well. It's probably easier to replace a copywriter than a scriptwriter.
Well, I just think that like it's not going to be the case. I just think that you're not going to get AI doing everything. What will happen is it will become like, you know, a collaboration between human and AI. And I don't think that's a bad thing. We've got to learn how to embrace that.
I feel like they're being overly threatened right now.
Yeah, that's
being a bit dramatic.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We're being dramatic and overly threatened. I'm worried about the safety of AI, don't get me wrong.
I really don't think people are being dramatic about like ChatGPT. Like, this is kind of the most mind-bending, world epoch-altering thing that's probably like ever happened in such a short space of time.
AI couldn't have said that.
Exactly. So it is a bit, I think it's a bit harsh to go, I overreact. In a bit, like this thing that was previously unfathomable.
That, like at the turn of the last century.
I know,
like,
but this time they're actually right.
I kind of sit on the fence with it at the minute. I agree with you. I don't think it's necessarily a threat. I think it will integrate itself into industries. So like writers will end up using it and artists will end up using it or whatever it may be, rather than it just take over. That being said, I still think there is cause for concern, because like it is early days, isn't it? Like what's say in 10 years time, the people using it then do just become redundant because everyone knows how to do it. It's like how they were teaching coding in schools, like, you know, ChatGPT can write code. So like,
yeah,
now that's going to be taught in schools. So that replaces everything that came before that. It's like, where does that cycle sort of end and where does it go?
Brave new world where no one knows how to do anything because it's been subsected for you.
That's fine with me. I'm lazy. So, you know.
Go on, Darren, what have you got?
I'm bringing a little ad campaign that's gone out from a company called VisionWorks, which are essentially like Specsavers or Vision Express or something like that. They released some video-based adverts where they essentially, without telling you, were challenging you to read smaller and smaller text. So they have these sort of dramatic scenes. One's a guy trying to dispose a bomb on the phone to MI-29
French,
or whatever.
French MI-5. Yeah, yeah. MI-29.
they're very, very
my
secret.
My sofa. There's a bomb in my sofa.
And another one's like a horror scene under a bed and it's all these tentacles and things. But anyway, it starts off with noticeably small subtitles, and then each time a new one comes up, they get smaller and smaller. And then at the end, it's just a small line of text. So without any introduction, you're kind of invited into testing your eye.
It's quite good. And cool way of drawing you into something.
And I like that. It's tackling a problem that exists. Everyone knows they should get their eyes checked. You're told it time and time again, but no one really tests themselves or goes to do it. And it's a way of sort of getting people to engage without getting them to like sign up for it.
Gina, I feel like you spend a lot of time down the opticians.
Because I'm a four eyes.
I've got
thick goggles on. Yeah, I can't see shit. I have really bad prescription. It's so bad. I once lied to Gareth about what it was for some weird reason.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway,
hey, you lied. Did you say it was worse or better than
I
it?
I said it was worse for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know why.
It's classic attention seeking me outside Patty and Bun after four margaritas. Anyway, yeah, I do spend a lot of time at the opticians. My eyesight changes quite a lot. But this advert, even with my glasses on, I'm sure I wouldn't be able to see the small print. So it wouldn't make me think, oh my God, my eyes are even worse now. I would just think, why is the text so small? That's it. That's me done.
I mean, there is the payoff at the end. They do say why. Okay. You know, what is going on.
They say if you struggled reading these subtitles, go get your eyes tested.
But I'm sure anyone would struggle to read them, surely, if they're that small.
Well, no, so, they're, no, they're, I mean, not, they're not minuscule. They're not like... they get smaller and smaller, but it's still legible.
Okay.
Lots of stifen.
So it's in German. Like German. They're written, like, I can't see the subtitles from there.
The subtitles are English.
The subtitles are in English. Which is clever in a sense. I don't know, because I couldn't tell if that was... At first, I thought that was intentional, because then
you have to read them.
But I think it's quite clever, because I only watched the Bomb Squad one. And it's a well-written script as well. It's quite a compelling little story as well. So you're already invested. I like it. I think it's a really neat idea.
I'm like anything like that where it's challenging you
to do something different
with the medium, right?
Yeah. You have to engage with it. You can't kind of consume it passively, I guess.
No, I think that's pretty neat. pretty clever.
So it's a piss take of a brand name though, isn't it? VisionWorks, because it's specifically for people whose vision doesn't work.
Gina, what have you got this week?
So I don't know about you guys, but I'm an oat milk girly. Are you oat milk girlies?
I'm an oat milk girly.
Are you an oat milk girly?
I like to suckle from the teeth of the cow.
I like my oat milk.
Anyway, so Oatly, where they milk the teats of oats.
Gina, that's my favourite joke you've made for a while.
One of their driving factors for making people drink oat milk and not dairy is the sustainability aspect of it, which isn't why I drink it. I just drink it because it tastes nicer. But they're saying that plant-based milks have a 44 to 76% smaller climate impact than cow's milk. So what they did in their campaign to highlight this, to show that, you know, we're so much better than dairy, they bought up premium advertising real estate in the New York Times, LA Times and Washington Post, which of course must have cost a lot of money. And on top of that, massive billboards in Times Square in Hollywood to display their environmental messaging. But they have challenged Big Dairy by, so some of these spaces are empty. They bought it and they're saying, we can give you this free space for you to do your adverts if you can tell us your climate impact, basically. And I thought it was quite cool. So the dairy figures need to be calculated and then it'll be published across these big ads next to Oatly's for like easy comparison. But obviously that's probably not going to happen because the dairy industry aren't that transparent and there's all these things about it being, you know, quite dodgy, even when it comes to like actually milking the cows and the conditions.
But what dodgy stuff they're doing while they're milking the cows?
Not the stuff you're thinking of.
Well, no, so you just said there's all this dodgy stuff. Like, I didn't know if I was missing out on
the conditions that the cows are kept in. There's like historically... Sure, there's
the
like
fact
really
that the cows
bad.
Have to be like artificially inseminated, yeah, yeah. And then they like, have their infant ripped away from
yeah,
them and stuff. Yeah,
I mean that, and there's like, it's just quite gross. The dairy industry is quite gross, which is again why a lot of people, they don't go like full on vegan or full on vegetarian, but dairy is like one of the first things I think people tend to start cutting out.
So I you know, I don't have a problem with dairy, but I don't have it just because it tastes yeah. gacky. And I've yeah. tried to explain this to people.
It's
gacky. Yeah, it is. But whereas oat milk or soya milk even, they don't leave a residue in your yeah. mouth, which yeah. milk does.
Like baby sick vibes.
Yeah, exactly. Also, yeah. It's one of the biggest wasteful industries. Like there's so much milk
yeah,
is wasted.
Which is Oatly's point. And I think it's really cool that they've paid so much money to prove that point because they bought these massive ad spaces, left them empty and said, show us, like tell us what you're, you know, climate impact is and basically show off how shit you are and no, you no. could have free advertising.
I find them so annoying and wanky.
There's a bit of a problem. There's a bit of a problem.
It's, well, show us your city. They're sanctimonious wankers and also they've been caught out so many times for not being that transparent themselves as well.
They actually have.
Like, they were bought by Blackstone.
Blackstone,
2019 and they've got like, you know, links with oil, is
and,
it?
And yeah, and like they were, they, I think they're fun, not funded Trump, but like the city or the head of it was kind of back in the Trump campaign and stuff, which it isn't, it's not a crime in itself, but you'd imagine lots of the people who drink Oatly might not be too happy with that. And like they've made some kind of dubious scientific claims in the past. Like I saw one earlier where they talked about kind of, I can't remember what the claim was, but it was like scientific experts, blah, blah, blah. And it turns out when they looked into it, they'd asked one person who made this claim and then finished it with probably. So like, I don't know, like, I get what they're doing, and I don't want to kind of outright question the sincerity of it, but I think there's a very kind of fertile market for the type for the offering that Oatly have, and I find them, I don't know, a little bit, I don't trust them, basically.
Okay. Do you think if the other stuff hadn't happened with them like being caught out before, you would have liked this campaign?
Maybe, but that stuff did happen, so it's kind of a pointless thought experiment.
They like writing, don't they? So the carton yeah. has a lot of writing on it, yeah. doesn't it?
And it tends to be
like,
quite funny.
Yeah, I mean, it really reminds me of when Innocent launched, and they've taken that sort of style, but they've put a bit more of a cause to it. But it's milk at the end of the day, it's just oat milk. I don't really buy into the brand. I'm on the fence, so like the idea's all right. Mm. Like, and it's interesting that they're calling out other people. It's got a bit of bite to it, innit? I like that. But I don't have an affinity with the brand. I'm not like, oh, I've got a real warm feeling around Oatly.
What's more impactful though, if a company were to supply their details and
or
use
not.
The
I think that would be good, yeah. No, exactly. I think if another company wanted to answer that would be quite interesting.
They won't. It'll just be this, and it will die as this.
This is just a clever bit of copy, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that it does the cause.
It's kind of preaching to the converted, I suppose, and it's more just to kind of build Oatly's own position as the kind of the anti-milk folk. Oh, it's tricky, isn't it, with milk? Because milk's kind of just milk. Like you don't have kind of milk brands in the same way.
Milk.
In the same way that
you
do
milk.
Take a shot of milk every time it says milk.
Go on.
No.
He gets every episode. He gets upset.
I've done it twice. No, I lost my flow. And
no,
I was,
no, you're saying that there's not.
I lost my flow, and I was only talking about milk. So
come on, no, you said it again. Yeah. No, I know what you're going to say though. With dairy, I can't think of a normal milk dairy brand. I just think of you just go Sainsbury's or Tesco's and
Cravendale, like, baby.
Oh, actually, that's true. Cravendale. No, yeah, no.
Müller as well.
I just wouldn't think Müller of that. Milk?
Yeah, you
Where
definitely
the heck
do.
Is Müller? Corner shops.
Yeah. Facts.
So you an old school milk drinker?
Old school milk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I fucking love
it. Yeah, that's old school milk.
That's what I'm going to
have,
yeah.
Like, your cornflakes, you would pour, or whatever. I know you're going to be like, oh no.
I have granola.
Yeah, I have granola with like you know, like cut prunes on it. But like, I could imagine him having prunes on his breakfast, can't you?
So
I do like prunes, yeah.
But would you have it with like cow's milk?
Not only would I have it with cow's milk, I would, you know, you get like the like red, green, blue.
Gold.
I
go
one above that. I go gold. And not top. Just gold as well, gold top, the one where it's got like the cream in the top. Yeah. I like to really feel the cow in my milk, in my breakfast.
It's all
fat. Yeah, no, I genuinely really like milk.
Okay. Right?
Yeah. I know that's not a terribly in vogue opinion at the moment, but I fucking love milk.
Yeah, fair enough.
Would you drink a glass of milk,
no.
Jaron?
Oh.
Just milk.
Just milk. Big glass of milk. Yeah, fuck yeah.
Like gross.
For the listeners, me and Jaron just spotted each other.
When you're pouring out of a fresh bottle and you pour your syrup, you get the circle of cream that dollops on
top. Oh, Jaron, you're making me hard. Cut that out.
No, definitely don't cut that out.
All right, cool. Well, James, there was a lot to scoot through there.
Yeah. There was.
What's making it?
I don't know.
Week?
Probably none of it. I don't know. Something's got to go in, so we're cut. I'll tell you what. I'm rather than analysing them all one by one, because I feel like we've talked about them enough, I will say I actually really like Jaron's one, because I was just watching the video of it just now as we were talking as well. And I think it's very well done. I think it's a good, tidy idea with a clean kind of execution. So let's just end it on a positive there. That's going in. Well done, Vision Works. You're in.
Okay, great. Great stuff. Where can people sign up to the Cool Shit newsletter?
zachagency.com/cool-sht.
Great. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you, Jaron. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.